teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. So thank you. I'll also remind you of the oath that you have all taken. Does anybody know of smudging today? No? Okay, that's fine. Moving to speaker business. So our next meeting of Students' Council is a week from today. It is in the council chambers, as per usual, at 6 o'clock. So for debate today, again, like I said, it's going to be a bit weird. So again, I need you to, when we're voting, or when you want to get on the speaker's list, just please raise your placard slash hand high. I'll write you down. Once I give you the trademark awkward nod, that means you're on the list, and you can put your placard down. Additionally, when we're talking, try and talk loud. Let me know if I'm not talking loud enough, because we don't have a microphone system today. So yeah, try and talk as loud as possible. Similarly, for the first little bit, my laptop will be on here. Please ignore any notifications you get, because you will see them all. I'm only half joking, but please don't read into it. Questions during open forum, you can just in the next little bit either send me a note or come poke me out. You're good to go. That's all it takes. I should know you're in the room pretty much. And give me your name. That's it. Okay, so we'll continue on. So, in terms of the late additions, there's one motion on here. I'm going to be special ordering it out of fear or so that the committee can meet quorum at this meeting. Yeah, don't worry, it's all in the grand scheme.
Sorry, I'm so excited to be here.
Good. We'll do attendance now. I did not forget, I promise. Okay, President Battengar.
President.
VP Agarwal.
President.
VP Brown.
Here.
VP Stats.
Here.
VP Larson.
Here.
Councilor Lee.
Here.
Proxy for Councilor McKenzie.
Yep.
Councilor Conrad.
Present.
Yeah, hello, but did you catch Proxy?
Yeah. Councilor Bargazaba?
Yeah.
Councilor Beasley?
Here.
Councilor Chen? Councilor Dixon?
Yeah.
Councilor Draper?
Hello, hello, and thanks for having the lights off.
Yes, Councilor Isaac?
She's here. She just went to the bathroom.
Present.
Okay, you can have it. Councilor Ismail? Councilor Marinakis? Councilor Kidd?
Yeah.
Can the executive get down a little bit, please? Councilor Seed?
Here.
Councilor Bose?
Here.
Councilor Vatiki?
Here.
Councilor Harris?
Here.
Councilor Sunday? On the line. Councilor Nguyen? Councilor Gadouche? Oh, Councilor Blonde, I'm sorry.
Here.
Councilor Venetia, Councilor Dillon, Councilor Gutierrez, and Councilor Syed. Okay, move on to the agenda here. So our first presentation, a case for creating a University of Alberta Charter of Student Rights and Responsibilities, presented by UASU President King Sebastian. The UASU has been working to create a charter of students' rights and responsibilities to help students to help support students navigate the various policies at the university. The charter puts student rights and responsibilities front of mind for both students and other members of the university community, creating a culture of improved clarity and accountability. This presentation will serve as an update and a consultation to the file. So I assume President Battengar motions. Is there a seconder for this? Councilor Draper, thank you. Is there any opposition? There is none, then in the back of our doors.
Share the slides with you, or is it on the bottom?
Yeah, the bottom here, that way.
That looks good.
I'll scroll through. Let me do it, and you'll have 15 minutes whenever you start.
Are folks okay if I sit down here, or do I want to stand? I'm going to say, if you want me to stand, just say something now. If not, I'm going to sit. Okay, that's cool. So, okay, that's just for you. Okay, so hello everyone. Welcome to council. My name is Kanksha, president of the ESU. I'm here today to talk about a charter of student rights and responsibilities that the ESU has been working on to, as the speaker mentioned, to fill a gap that's been addressed. The next slide that you cannot see, sorry, is sort of outlining the issue. So this is the same presentation slide that, by the way, that I've been giving to university stakeholders. So I'm happy to take feedback on any of the pieces, but the key is in the documents. You'll see the sort of charter piece. That's probably the most key thing that I'm looking for your feedback on. But the issue is that there's a lot of policies everywhere across this campus. They're all over the place, but there's no centralized one-stop shop for students to be able to understand where their rights are held, where their responsibilities are held, or where their rights and responsibilities can be challenged. And so we found that gap in the system, and we have things like the Code of Student Behavior, academic appeals policy, but again, they're so all over the place, and it's really hard to navigate a system, not only for students, but for faculty and for staff. Because of this, a lot of students don't understand how to make appeals or how to actually utilize their rights for a positive reason, or what their responsibilities are as a student, because it's just unclear to them coming into the university. So we did an exploratory study, if you want to go to the next slide, about this in 2017. We elicited about 1,500 responses, and what we found was that students are pretty unaware of what their rights are, and so we knew that anecdotally, but the statistics also confirmed that for us. So about 58% of respondents said that they didn't know anything at all about what their rights and responsibilities were, and about 10% of them were unaware of any of the documents even existing. So some of the documents that we put out there were the sexual violence prevention policy papers, the Code of Student Behavior, the procedural rights that you might have, and we also threw in a couple of more elusive documents just to see if people knew about some of the special documents and not just the really, really generic ones. But it turns out 10% of campus does not know what any of those are. So these numbers are, again, another indication that a charter of student rights is for sure something that needs to be addressed on campus. So the next slide sort of talks a little bit about more data. And so we tried to ask about if you knew if the information was easy to find. About 75% of people said the information was, they couldn't find it at all, or they maybe would be able to find it. And if people wanted to appeal a grade, only 25% of students actually knew how to appeal their grade, especially if the ones who have gone through an appeal before, they were the ones that were more likely to know where to go because they've already dealt with the process. The next slide talks about a lot of the qualitative research that we did. And I think it's important to address the qualitative piece because it really brings to light the importance as to why this is, the urgent need, I guess, as to why this is so important. And so a lot of the words that came up in the survey was feelings like powerless, the power dynamic between faculty and staff and students. If you go to the next slide, people talk about losing control or feeling like they don't have control over a situation. This next sort of pathway talks about the idea of TAs not understanding. And so oftentimes when we think about students on campus, they don't come here to join a student group per se. They come to campus to get a degree, most of us hopefully. And then you happen to find things that you love along the way. Because of that, we know that the number one touch point for students is their TAs, their faculty, their staff. And it's not necessarily going to be the SU. And so we need to ensure that the frontline services or the front line of the university is the most educated on things like this, which is again reiterating the concept that the charter doesn't just serve students, it actually serves the entire community. And one of these pieces is that if the TA for this class, for example, had access to a document where they could look at their rights and responsibilities, they would be more likely to help support a student through an academic appeal, or at least help guide a student in terms of telling them where they can go next, or the steps that they can take to sort of follow through with an appeal, or reverse an appeal, or just that's been made. The next slide, sir. So all of this, we came to the solution of this Charter of Student Rights. We added the and responsibilities piece this year, because I think it is important to understand that students, we do have responsibilities to be engaged, to show up to class, to at least know where to go to look for these rights. So we added that piece as a sort of an accountability measure for ourselves, but also as an accountability measure for the student or for the university population as a whole. So again, the charter, as a very quick line, is a simple consolidation of current existing UAPL policy in one single stop shop for students, faculty, and staff to look at, which also increases the culture of accountability and clarity. So this would sort of be what I'm calling phase one of the project, because clearly, once we consolidate all the policies into one document, we're gonna see that there's holes in the system, right? Like there's no policies right now on bringing in children to classrooms. There's not a lot of policy regarding lactation. There's not a lot of policies regarding if you have a mental illness, for example, how you would actually be able to opt out of the classroom setting that sort of accentuates the way that your mental illness reacts. So a very specific example is that there's a lot of students who are impacted by light, and I feel like I'm one of those people. So this council member who have the same thing. There's actually no policy in which you can use that as an academic accessibility need piece, because your classroom is filled with a lot of other people. So a lot of students who are navigating these very small yet very important mental wellness issues are not covered at all in any sort of policy. The only reason I know that though is because I was able to look at the charter, that centralized documents, and find gaps. So that's sort of the second phase that I'm hoping will get completed next year, is a review of policies that are currently in place and finding the gaps and holes through which we can use this charter to empower us to actually write policy that reflects the student body. And one of those things that you would have to go through is the regular governance process of the student union and of the university to ensure that when you're updating the policy or creating new policy, that the pathways are clear. So again, the first phase is just the consolidation piece plus the educational piece, so socializing the document. And the second phase is really the updating of the policy and the continuation of education and socialization of the document. Go to the next slide. So what would be included in the charter is a preamble to set the tone of the document. So because there's nothing of the sort right now, we wanted a preamble that would actually really reflect what the document is trying to get at. There's actually a lot of power also in preambles, because it sets the tone, as I said, of a document. If it's negative tone, there might be negative connotation. If it's positive tone, there might be positive connotation. And so a lot of the feedback that I'm trying to solicit is actually about the preamble, because that's one of the pieces that will make, I think, or break the way this policy, or the charter, sorry, is implemented. It also is a consolidation of three major types of rights: academic, procedural, and fundamental. So academic rights relate to assessment, grading, plagiarism, appeals, and accommodations. Procedural rights relate to student discipline, which can be both academic and non-academic, so it's a little bit of a blurrier line, as well as rights related to complaints, appeals, and issues or instances of sexual harassment and violence. And fundamental rights are the ones that are afforded to students about provincial, federal legislation, and protections from discrimination and harassment. And now with the new freedom of speech policies, that will potentially fall under this category as well. Next slide. These are sort of the groups and stakeholders that I've already consulted or in the process of consulting, to sort of make sure that this document is headed in the right place. So as you can see, we've taken it to a bunch of different places across the province and across the country. We've brought it to a lot of general faculties, council committees, which are the academic bodies here on campus. And the president's office and the dean of students have been really, really amazing in supporting the pushing of this project. I think if it wasn't for them really being on our side, we would have a really hard time, getting this through as fast as we are getting it through now. And upcoming, we're talking to COFA, the Council of Faculty Associations, vis-a-vis VP Academic Agarwal, Council, I'm here today, the Office of the Ombuds, which is the office that is essentially a nonpartisan office that helps you through a lot of these rights and procedural issues, and associate deans, which are the most likely portfolio in every faculty that has to actually deal with appeals once it gets to that level. So typically when you're going through, for example, an appeal, you go to your prof and it might get dealt with your professor. Typically it doesn't, and you have to move up to a higher level administrator, and that's typically your associate deans. Next slide. So this is the draft preamble that I was telling you folks about. The only difference between So we did make a couple of updates vis-a-vis all of the other presentations, like literally like today, and the presentation was tonight. So I didn't really get a chance to update you folks, but actually, can I AirPlay?
Yeah.
And the AirPlay monster. Because then I can show you folks the most up-to-date version. The reason that I didn't send it out is because we literally updated it, like I think 25 minutes before I walked out.
Do I disconnect?
Yes, please. And then I'll take any questions. I see Juan has a question too.
Yeah, sorry, on the slide where you had the people you talked to, you had a bunch of abbreviations. We go to expand.
That's right, for sure. So the abbreviations are in the... the abbreviations were various U15 SU executives. So the U15 are the top 50 universities, research intensive universities in Canada. So we talked to McGill, Toronto, UBC, Queens. I did Manitoba, but like obviously they're U15. Oh, Manitoba, and a couple of other execs. The General Faculties Council is GFC, so that's the academic body I was telling you about. The CLE is the Committee on the Learning Environment. Focuses specifically on the environment that we learn within and how we can make changes to better that environment. GFC Executive Committee is essentially the body that decides the agenda for GFC, chaired by the university president. They make decisions about academic parchments, and anything that has to do with dollars that isn't enough dollars to go to APC, which is the Planning Committee or the Board of Governors. Those two exact, well, feel free to please. If I'm not doing it right, you can let me know. COSA is the Council on Student Affairs, a brand new GFC committee that has a majority of students on it versus faculty. And it was created last year to sort of fill the need of the fact that there's no formal process through which students are consulted in academic governance. And so this committee acts as that. And the Academic Planning Committee is that liaison between when GFC, the academic body, makes decisions that relate to money, this is the committee it'll likely go to because GFC doesn't have control over dollars, but the Board of Governor does. So the Board of Governors and APC and GFC are very connected. If that makes sense. That's good clarification. I think that's all the acronyms. So this is the new preamble, y'all. And it's looking good, in my opinion. So I'm happy to take any feedback on it. So this is the document, and this is the preamble, but I'm happy to take any questions, comments, concerns, or feedback, and maybe everyone has been very kind to take very frantic notes while you guys will talk, because I am tracking everything that's being said, so we can take this consideration.
Thank you for the presentation. I was wondering if this document would be covering students' rights if they were members of the Non-Academic Staff Association.
It does cover students who are employed, but not the section that talks about that basically says please refer to your contract, your rights that are additional to your academic or to your assigned project in university. Sorry for wrong to mention this. It also includes graduate student rights explicitly and separately because there's a lot of them have overlap, but a lot of them are not the same.
But these were specifically in the context of classroom and learning, or does this also include residence rights?
So residence rights are not included because they're not protected truly under any peer legislation. So it is dealing with the most academic body. Juan and then Sam.
What is the, so one thing that isn't clear to me is, I don't know how, what is the expected length of this document? Like how many expected, right? I mean, like obviously we probably don't have the final number yet.
I have it, so pages. Three pages. This is the whole document.
Okay.
So for trying to find a loophole right now to figure out a way for us to get into governance at a level at which people can adopt in some of this. The hope is that it's socialized enough, though, that it would automatically become the document, the go-to document, instead of the code of student behavior, because this is inclusive of our code. So once it's approved by GFC, the hope is that it'll get to, on the university governance website as an adopted document, and our website will hold the FAQs, the document, and will hopefully act as a way to connect students with the charter. So anywhere that we can put it, we're going to put it, but some of this unfortunately is not one of those guaranteed. I hope that's possible. I've already forgot the order. Can you help?
We have to extend this real quick, unfortunately. So right now, 15 minutes, we need 2/3 to continue. So please, if I could time, so I can count down.
It's 2/3 to me.
It's 2/3. I see that. I'm counting anyway. My job. Okay, 10 more.
Can I write on the screen?
I can do it as well.
Okay, David, Talia, Omlin, and then anybody else.
So when do you think students will be able to have this information publicly available? Where adults would they be able to access that? For the final documents, and then does this have any faculty to faculty variation? I know for certain faculties, they have different have different, I guess, responsibilities for their student body. Would that be something that we consolidate in the same document for different faculties to be able to access that, or would it be an entirely different campus?
So the first question, where would it be? It'll be on all university governance websites and the SU as a hosting document, but we are working right now on a socialization plan, so there's various touch points through which we can advertise this. For example, we're hoping right now to look at the handbook. We could welcome orientation at a specific separate booth, actually, because rights and possibilities are like unique, I guess, to typical booths that we could welcome. And then the other hope is newsletter, and the other hope is the academic and non-academic staff newsletters as well. So we are trying to find like literally any method of people that will help socialize this we're going to take, but we just want to make sure that we can guarantee that all 30,000 students will eventually touch this, and the regular office is also been really helpful in terms of telling us about what they're happy to post on their website. So everyone is really bought into it in terms of the concept, but I am like genuinely I would be a candidate next year, an executive next year, to take it on to make sure that it actually follows through. Talia, Omlin, and then Omlin.
Yeah, the second.
Oh, sorry. The right joint practice. Okay, yeah. So it is actually bigger for every single. So every faculty has their own rights and regulations, and the document does make that clear, either somewhere at the top or somewhere at the bottom, where it says that this document is like, oh yeah, in addition, faculty specific standards and procedures can affect student rights and responsibilities. And that was the associate dean's biggest piece of feedback, is that the faculty of arts might have a different appeals process than the university does, but de facto, the university policy is always upheld. If that makes sense. But I don't know, we want to make that more clear.
Live so people can hear you better.
would it also include policies that we would like to see? Because, like, for example, we talked about, like, breastfeeding children in classrooms. There is no university policy on that, and different faculties have different policies, if even.
Yeah.
Right? But that's, like, very clearly, like, an incredibly important student, right?
Yeah.
So how are, like, technically non-existing policies included in this?
So they're not included at all, except for in the internal documents for the SU, where once this is approved by GOC, the next thing I'll transition on is a list of policies. I'll probably have to come back to a lot of the points that I have, to be like, what policies are missing in this document? So I'll start doing a bit of it before I leave and return, but hopefully that's something I'll pick up. But it is going to be an SU-led project, because I don't see anybody from the university like thinking about these things.
So is the goal to expand this as neurons get added?
Yeah. Also, like, I really want to iterate that it's very, like, a dynamic document, which is why at the very top we have, like, last updated January 21st, 2020, because, like, if people in, like, 5 months are like, hey, we should update the preamble, we could literally do that very easily as long as we're continuously updating it. The McGill equivalent, I think, is the best option, but if you look at it, it's made in the 80s, and it's been updated, like, 40 times after, and they constantly are updating it, so the hope is that it's very dynamic, which is why it's not being, like, adopted as an official policy, because it's adopted as a consolidation of policy, which actually gives us more leeway to be really dynamic
with
the document.
Can you hear real quick? There's a question from the live stream. Councilor Sunday. What has the feedback been from both the university and the Graduate Students Association?
So I'll start with the GSA. They love it. I'm presenting at the faculty, the FGSR Council tomorrow, Faculty of Graduate Studies and Research Committee tomorrow to get their final feedback, but they have their own section at the very end of the document. Overwhelmingly, the president, Fahed, and I have been working on this very collaboratively. The university's only feedback has really just been about the idea of faculty-specific standards and procedures, because they're very concerned that people are going to look at this document and think that that's it and there's no other policies that exist. But there's too many policies that exist at the faculty level for us to create one for every faculty. And so our solution to that was that last sentence. And their other concern has been, how do we socialize this so that more students can actually reach it? And the last piece of feedback that we got was, like, they wanted us to update the preamble. Like, a lot of people were wordsmithing it, like, if we should use and or. So every single piece of feedback that we got, we just put it into this new preamble.
I was wondering, like, not a lot of things changes between faculties. Like, I mean, there are different procedures for, like, applying for re-examination or exams and bills. Would it be possible to, like, form a task force from SU and actually do, like, faculty specific? It shouldn't take that much of a work, but would it be possible?
We could. I'm not opposed to the idea at all. I literally truly do not have the time to do it in my term, but to be very blunt.
That's why I suggest
it. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to do. I also think, like, if we create too many of these charters with too many versions, is it going to confuse students more, right? Or should faculties take on the project on their own? Because why is it the SU has to do everything all the time, like, consistently? If we've set out the main document of the Charter of Human Rights, that clearly shows that students are pissed off if they don't have access to their own rights and responsibilities. So as much as I want to be like, yeah, I think it's a good idea to create a task force, part of me is like, no, because faculties know this is a priority now and they should be doing a better job of educating students on their own specific standards, if that makes sense. No real answer there, but just thrown out to the wind, how much can we actually do for other faculties to take responsibility for their own mistakes?
Like, just like active tense versus passive, the document is meant to serve as a guide. Can we just say the document is a guide? Or do we need to say that it's meant, like, there's this potential of purpose here?
No. Right. I'm just going to put that as a comment, so I don't have to. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? Okay, so the next time that some people might see this is at GFC, January 27th. I'll be bringing it there. So that's, again, the academic body. So if you want to speak in favor of it, that would be cool. It'd be you don't like it, that's also your chance to not speak in favor of it, and that's also cool. But there's going to be a lot of feedback, I can only assume, from the academic body, and I think this is a great way for us to solicit feedback and advice on how to socialize the document better, since we're having a hard time making it that really close to this. Okay. Well, thanks everyone. You'll see the whole draft in the GFC policies, and I'll send it out to council as soon as we have more, like the last round.
Hey, thank you, President Batengard. You want to take your thing off the screen? You can.
Yes, I almost heard a lot of yikes.
And I will sit with this behind me for a while. So we're going to carry on. We'll move into Executive Committee report. Are there any members of the executive who wish to make a report? VP Brown, 2 minutes.
Hi, thanks, Mr. Speaker. Not too much to update on since we saw each other a week ago, but just looking at my calendar on what to update and folks on. Reminder, I'll be in Calgary on Monday, Tuesday next week. CAUSE is doing a sort of a mini planning conference on how to prepare for the likelihood that the spring provincial budget sort of goes the way we think it's going to go. So that should be useful. As well, the Students Not Silent Planning Group will be meeting again this week at 12 o'clock in sub 606. Everyone is invited to be a part of that. And then next week we will also be meeting on Friday the 31st at 4 p.m. same room. And I think that is it for me. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. VP Agarwal, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So we are in the midst of Student Leaders Week. Many of you have come out to some of the events. Earlier today we had the council mixer, and I see some new faces here, so welcome to Students Council. Just a reminder that throughout the rest of the week up until Thursday night, we have sessions. Tomorrow we have an Indigenous panel. We have presentations on EDI and leadership, social media and campaigning, how to manage a campaign if you're a campaign manager for SU elections or faculty association elections. So definitely check out uasu.ca for more of the full events and the calendar there. I was in a meeting with OASIS regarding the FAF approval, which most of you were quite aware of at last council, so the kind of a game plan of approving the FAF proposal for next week's council meeting, so hopefully they can get the proposal more thorough and more polished. I've mentioned this before, the Indigenous Academic Advising Survey that was last done in 2014 is now going to be done, it's going to be rolled out this April, which I'm very excited about. I was pushing for this to happen as one of the ARC recommendations to the new hired Vice Provost Indigenous. We actually just met today and we have kind of a timeline, so very excited about that. If anyone has any comments or any feedback about the process, feel free to reach out to me. Happy to chat about that. Another thing, we also specifically looked at the data from last year's academic advising survey, specifically for Campus St. John students, and there's some pretty striking concerns around that. So we're definitely going to be bringing that to deans and faculty councils. Adam's also looking into that as well. If you have any other comments, or if you want to like meet for coffee and chat about anything regarding the UK portfolio, reach out to me, send me an email, send me a message.
Sounds exactly 2 minutes. Very impressive.
Right on.
VP Stat, 2 minutes.
Hello, Council. It's been a whole week since my last report. Business Advisory Group met for the first time, had them all sign NDAs, provided the in-depth financials of all of their businesses, as well as briefs on every business, and started a conversation with all those students, and we'll continue to do so. Have another meeting this month, and they'll probably have 2 meetings a month after that. And I very much look forward to transitioning that to the next OpsFi, as well as having some useful conversations. I have spent a ton of time in the last week and a bit preparing budget principles that I'll bring to council probably next week. Meeting with all our directors, meeting to core managers, talking to exec about it, and really trying to make it a much more collaborative process of the organization. I think it's a sort of bit trying to find areas to that everyone agrees things big they want certain items that will provide value to the organization. The URSQ Town Hall is on Thursday, and you probably all saw the massive email invitation I sent to most of you. a very big project coming down soon, probably in there about next week, that I'm working on. I look forward to sharing with you soon. And then I also am in the process of adding an additional seat on the NOA committee, which will provide a very unique opportunity for whatever student has that spot to help with the social aspect, that one of the social aspects that exists across, campus. But oftentimes the positions aren't easily communicated. You get to work with the office by year on year to help improve student engagement, raise money, and also help the NOA itself find different kind of events like case studies and some of their fundraising events. So that is also coming.
Great, thank you. VP Larson, 2 minutes.
All right, thank you. So since last week, on Wednesday, we had our Peter Lougheed mental health video for Dreamer, that I moderated a panel afterwards talking about stigma reductions around counseling clinical services, and sort of looking to advance the stigma and look to further reduce barriers there. Thursday was a little bit more chill. We've been working with the First People's House and the Fine Arts Faculty to try and acquire 5 Indigenous art muralists to work on the Indigenous art mural project, which will be running an engagement session with the First People's House and Transition Year program next week. And then we attended the Oasis Gala on Saturday, which was a really good event. But other than that, things have been a little bit quieter this week in the office, which has been good. But I've just had various one-on-one meetings looking to tie things up for training for Residents Association next year. But other than that,
thank you. Any other members of the executive wishing to make a report? President Matt, you are 2 minutes.
Actually, I'd like to motion to suspend standards, but it can take longer than 2 minutes because I don't know how else to update on the performance metrics without taking a lot of time.
Okay. Batagar moves. Do you have a time length you'd like to see, or do you just want to get rid of it entirely?
Okay. I think 10 minutes is good. Inclusive Q&A.
Oh,
just kidding. There's open forum. Okay, 5 minutes.
5 minutes. For your book. Okay, that's good. Fine. Just like,
yeah.
Anyway. Batagar moves, seconder, Governor Lee. This is to suspend standing order, so it takes 2/3. All in favor, please raise it. Everything nice and high. Thank you. Okay, President Vatgar, you have 5 minutes for your update.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm also going to update on things that are not PDF related because I did give a formal report last week and I feel like a lot has happened. So, starting from last week, our managers actually participated in a blanket exercise, which is something that we've been pushing for so long, and I'm so happy to say that it actually went incredible. And the reason I know this is because the circle that we did after you do the blanket exercise, I think is very indicative of the tone and the nature, and it was actually very incredible to see our managers reflect on the practices that they've been doing and how they now realize why it's so important to take it to mind, why reconciliation is so important to think about. And a lot of them were able to make really amazing correlations, which will hopefully translate into actually creating a very inclusive workspace. So that is just phase one of many equity, diversity, and inclusivity training sessions that our managers are going to be receiving. So that was last Tuesday. Since then, we've also had a meeting with the Board Learning Student Research and Experience Committee regarding enrollment. It was a closed session, it was an emergency session to talk about what are the targets that the university is setting for enrollment and why these targets are so important to be thinking about. And this weekend, both VP Larson and myself were in meetings like from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. regarding the presidential search committee. So we're on track to hiring a university president. It's rough for sure, but it's going. It's taking a lot of time, but it's going. Yesterday morning at 9 a.m., the government finally officially announced what they're calling an outcomes-based funding model for post-secondary universities. I've been very vocal online, as is VP Brown and the Council of Alberta University Students, that this is really not a very positive thing for students overall. Arguably, there are some things about it that I actually think could benefit the campus community and would really push your institutions to look for efficiencies in the system, but a lot of things are hidden behind closed doors. And I say that because we were not consulted on the issue as clearly as we wanted to, even after asking several times to be included in decisions about this. And so they've really been emphasizing, as you can tell, the importance of the province's fiscal responsibility to the McKinnon report. And so for those who don't know what that report is, A, I would read it, but B, it essentially said that they need universities to start making efficiencies in their budget to reflect the post, to ensure that the performance of universities is, I guess, operating correctly. And so some of the performance metrics will be finalized as per discussions with student leaders. That's what they told us this morning. And some of those things are employment rate for graduate employment rate, median graduate income, graduate skills and competencies, work integrated learning opportunities, administrative expense ratio, a sponsored research revenue, enrollment, including potential targets, and two of these formulas, one is going to be created by the university and one is open to students to create. So I don't know what that process looks like. I don't know what any of these metrics mean. I have no further information other than literally what the press release was yesterday, which I think speaks again to how disappointing this rollout was. Something that could have actually benefited campus is not really being rolled out correctly. And the amount of government funding tied to these metrics will increase gradually over 3 years to a maximum of 40%. So right now, 15% of our budget is going to come from these metrics. And over 3 years, they're gonna increase it so that 40% of university funding is gonna come from the new performance-based metrics that they've outlined here. And every single key metric is also going to be weighted differently depending on every institution. So if institutions that meet 100% of their allocated funding, meet 100% of their metric, they will receive 100% of their allocated funding. However, if institutions do not meet the targets, then the institution will receive funding that is proportionate to their levels of achievement. So if you only receive if we set a target at the U of A to enroll 25 more students last year, and we enroll 4 more students, that is like, we only are gonna receive 5% of the dollars. What happens to those additional dollars? I have no idea. Do they stay in the post-secondary system or do they not? I don't know, and I wish I did know. It's also gonna be implemented through a 3-year investment management agreement, which I can touch on further later. But these agreements are gonna be negotiated individually. So on a plus note, we're not competing with other institutions in the province. We're essentially competing with ourselves, which one could argue is good, one could argue is bad, because if we can game the system properly, potentially these metrics will look great for us. But the problem is that some of these metrics are very unclear as to what they're even measuring. So how are you measuring work-integrated learning? Is it that every student does a work-integrated learning experience, or is it that every student has access to a work-integrated learning experience? And those are two different concepts. But I think something like work integrated learning is actually a very positive metric for the university to measure if implemented again correctly. And the implementation starts in April, and the budget for the University of Alberta is going to be approved in March. So that gives us effectively 2 months to create our budget in response to this, and 1 month to allow for the implementation of our budget to be impacted by performance-based metrics, which I can see having another negative impact on students, because the university is truly trying their best to keep us in the loop and like really consult us and like allow us to be at the table, and like they are, but the problem is they have to make decisions within like 24 hours sometimes. They didn't even know the synopsis was happening until we told them it was happening. So there's a lot of disconnect between government and the student body, and I want to include the university in that because they have been trying their best to really support us and vice versa, but the government has been really difficult to consult with. But I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your report. Moving to board and committee report, which is next, and we'll see if Councillor Sunday has anything for ARC. Give him a second to type it out. No, there is no report from ARC. We'll move into audit. Councillor C, would you like to make your report? You have 2 minutes.
Education, so their spring summer 2018-19 was approved, and they've been like as student administrators.
report your bylaw?
Yes, please.
You have 2 minutes.
Bylaw has not met since our last meeting. We meet on non-council Wednesdays. Due to a rebooking issue, we will not be meeting this week. However, we will most likely be having a e-vote surrounding the second principles of, I believe it was Bill 7, that was sent back to us from council at our last meeting. We've also had an e-vote in between last meeting and now about Bill 9, which was attached as an information item. I want the motion, but for some reason there was just a clerical hiccup on either end. I'm not entirely sure what happened with that, but I'll be motioning to have that from the floor later on to vote on second principles of updating the DMUs.
Thank you. Move on to Council Administration Committee, Councilor Peter. Yes.
So Council Administration Committee, Council Administration Committee has not met yet, but I was able to assist with some DRO interviews, and the CRO decided to reopen DRO interviews for another week. So if anybody knows anybody that would be a really great DRO, they have until tomorrow. So hit up your friends now. This is mostly just a desperate attempt, but like seriously, if you know people who would be good DROs, hit them up now, get them in there. We should be wrapping up the end of the DRO interviews by the end of this week, and then hopefully be able to come full elections on this at the end of this week. Also, a couple of different members of council have been kind of like coming over telling me, asking for extra name tags. If you're missing a name tag, please just send me an email, because then I can get like paper copies or like a paper trail, and I can't forget the people that are missing name tags, and then I can bring them all to the right people.
Great. Thank you. President Battinger, I'd like to make a report on behalf of the executive.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
2 minutes, go for
it. Executive committee met yesterday, and we'll meet again on Thursday. The biggest thing we talked about was this idea that we have about increasing our alumni engagement. So we're hosting a, what we're calling preliminarily, a leader center with industry leaders from across the Edmonton region, specifically in our building, co-hosted by the university and the Graduates Association, to really ensure that the community members and industry leaders see post-secondary leaders as the go-to, not the media, and not necessarily the government. And so really trying to retake back the narrative of what it looks like to be making decisions about students. So this is going to be hosted on April 18th, and it's going to be including April 16th, and it's going to be with our incoming executives. So it'll be hopefully their first major event that they get to go to. But it's really about talking about alumni engagement and reestablishing our importance in the community. This is not, this is something that other institutions have done before, but this is the first time that it's ever happening conjoined with the university and the graduate students. So that's basically a big thing that we've been talking about. And we're meeting again tomorrow to be talking more about things like the Student Leaders Week update and a project allocation has come forward for the Festival of Undergraduate Creative Arts and Research, the FERCA sponsorship. So if you haven't heard about FERCA, you should Google it and then go to the events because it'll be fun.
Great, thank you. VP Staff, Finance Committee, you have 2 minutes.
Speaker, Finance Committee has not met since last meeting. However, there should be a report going out for it to meet in the next week. This Finance Committee has been set up the budget principles ASAP, so I'm bringing to Council, and all of you can look at it too. So that's going to be on the schedule, hopefully, sometime in the next 7 days.
Okay, thank you. Nominating Committee, does the proxy for Councilor McKenzie have anything? Do you know?
Not that I know.
All right, VP Brown.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Nominating Committee has not met since the last meeting. However, the position of International Student at Large Sustainability Committee is up and online and being shared, so please spread that to Council. Please spread that in your networks. And we will meet once that closes to figure out that last member of the Sustainability Committee.
There's also a nominating committee report from Councilor McKenzie on the late additions.
That too.
Anybody who wants to read that. Councillor Vargas Alba for Policy Committee.
Yeah, we were going to meet today, but we went to the student mixer instead, so we'll be meeting tomorrow, same place, at 1:15. Check out some cool policy. It's not like a super heavy agenda, but it's going to be a fun one. So, that's it.
Thank you. Governor Lee from the Undergraduate Board of Governors.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Brief shout out to Councillor Draper and Oasis and the Arts Gala. It was some good stuff.
So for what's coming up on the board in the next couple weeks, this Friday, the President Kladnagar, I think, are going to the Board GFC Summit. The topic of the Board GFC Summit is going to be the performance-based funding metrics that obviously we're going to be dealing with in the next year. So President Kladnagar talked about it all quite well, but just a couple of my brief thoughts are that there's a serious concern that we're going to be punished for things that are way beyond our control. If there's an economic downturn or hypothetically, this government that decides to lay off a bunch of nurses and teachers, that reflects on some universities' metrics that were judged on, and there's also a lot of perverse incentives that I see in this. So I'm just hoping that on Friday we'll have a chance to clear up maybe some more details or get a slightly better understanding of what this will look like. Then on February 7th, we'll be attending a budget briefing where I don't expect too many surprises, but we may learn exactly how bad things are going to be. And the full budget vote at the Board of Governors, just so you're all aware of this, is going to be on March 13th. So I would suggest that you mark that date. Not much else happening other than that, though.
Perfect. Thank you. I Councilor Dixon for the Sustainability Committee. You have 2 minutes.
Cool. So not too much update on having our first meeting of the term with everybody who has been nominated and elected on Thursday at 6 p.m. As we already mentioned, the international student position was posted to Jobkin recently. Yay. So please share that, particularly with your friends who are interested in sustainability, or maybe they don't have a lot of experience working with it but are interested in contributing their thoughts. It'd be great to get some really good applications to that. And then today we're also nominating another counselor to replace the position that is no longer filled. And then we'll have all of the positions filled for this committee so that we can really get off the ground and running. But we do have a few things on our agenda coming.
All right, thank you. Are there any other board or committee reports anybody would like to make? There are none, we will continue on to open forum. So for our guests, open forum is for guests to come and ask questions of counselors. No one has registered for open forum, but if you still want to ask questions, let me know and we will consider you registered. But are there any guests of council who have questions? There are none. We will continue to question period, which is where, of course, the counselors can ask questions of other counselors. So, let me just—if you want to ask a question, just raise your hand throughout the process. I'm going to write the names down, and I will nod at you when you are good to go. Anyway, so again, if you have a thing, a question, please raise your placard. Hi, and I will write you down, and then you're good. VP Brown, you may begin, and again, I'll remind you, questions can be 30 seconds long, and then you have 2 minutes to answer them. So I'm going to have another time. VP Brown, you can go for it, though.
Thank you, Speaker. Just a quick question to Councilor Beasley, if you can just elaborate on the DRO positions and what that entails, just so people can get accurate information to their friends who can apply.
All right, Councilor Beasley, you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So the deputy returning officer positions exist in supporting roles to the chief returning officer. So the elections office will be populated at any one time by the chief returning officer, responsible for like the oversight of the entire election. And a number of the deputy returning officers, that's up to the discretion of the chief returning officer, usually about 2 to 3. And so the deputy returning officers usually will be helping out like forums and stuff like that. So they'll be the ones like videotaping all the forums to make sure they're broadcasted out. Or they'll be helping, like, filling office hours for the elections office to make sure that, like, the elections office always has someone there, so you don't just, like, show up at the elections office and you're kind of scared because no one's around. So deputy returning officers then, like, occupy, like, very, like, real and important roles in the process. It's a paid position as well, which is nice and rare in what we do. But it's a really great opportunity, and it's only available to undergraduate students. So if you know any undergraduate students that's interested in, like, politics or in like elections in general, if they've worked in elections in the past, if they've done like polling booths, even the advanced polling booths and stuff, it's a super great stepping stone to get more involved with the SU or to just try your hand at like running a large election. So, yeah.
All right, thank you. Next up is Councilor Draper, you have 30 seconds.
This is one for the Agarwal. just like to quickly thank him for his emceeing of the Oasis Art Gala. So I think this is a good participation. My question has to do with Student Leaders Week. I'm curious if there's some of the metrics from the first 2 days and see if it compares with Gov Week and attendance, and how much it's grown, if it's grown, and kind of what we can expect for the next 2 days.
Great. Thank you. VP Agarwal, you have.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for the question. I haven't had a chance to look at comparative metrics from Gov Week last year. I do know some of the metrics for example, the center that came out, we had about 35 students come up, which was a pretty decent event size. Today, for today's council event, as well as some of the events earlier, I think in total throughout the day, we had just over 50 to 60 people. Keep in mind that this is the first year, there's a rebrand. Again, the reason why we changed the name from Gov Week to Student Leaders Week is to really cast the net wider, and in essence, governance is a subset of leadership. So I think I'm very optimistic that the rest of the week will be picking up, and hopefully for next year it'll be a larger. But I think so far it's been a huge success. So far. I'm very excited to see what's next.
Okay. All right, thank you, Councillor Bowes. You have 30 seconds.
So this question is for President Bernhardt. So could you please explain the whole performance based on the intake in a much more simple way?
Yes,
if you were basically for an agent, would it be possible for you to just give a specific example of how it might apply the scenario?
So I hope my lab was
okay.
Okay. So essentially, the university gets, let's just say, $10 million from the government of Alberta every year to subsidize the cost of education. They just give it to us per an agreement that we have. Now, the government is saying, out of that $10 million, we're going to give you $4 million based on a set of performance metrics, and those performance metrics are like key performance indicators. So if you're a business, you often set metrics of success, right? And a metric for success for the university business could be graduation rates. So if we have 5,000 students and only 4,000 are graduating and our target was 5,000, we've only actually accomplished 80% of our goal, and we're only going to get 80% of the funding for that specific pot of money. But there's about 8 funding metrics that we're going to get different pots of money for, if that makes sense, a little bit more. So I wish I could draw this out because it's actually very confusing, and I understand why it's confusing, but basically, if you're a business and you're not doing good enough as a business and you're not meeting your targets, then they're not going to give us the money to subsidize our business. It's like if you were to apply for an award and I'm like, last year you said that you were involved in 10 things and this year you're only doing 9 things, I'm not going to give you the award. But I'm not even going to look at the fact that the 9 things you're doing are 10 times cooler than the things that you were doing the year before. It's just the sheer fact that you're doing 9 instead of 10, and you're going to get less money for it. Even though you're showing the financial need to be able to get these awards. If you're going to put that in the university context, it's the same thing, where we're now being judged on these 10 metrics, and we don't know what those metrics look like, and a lot of the metrics are actually failures of the government to, for example, provide job opportunities for students. Why are universities being penalized for students not getting jobs after they graduate when it's actually the economy's fault, right? And universities are now being judged because if I graduate and don't get a job, the university is going to get less funding because of me, because I couldn't acquire a position. But the fact of the matter is that me not finding a job is, one, it could be intentional. What if I don't want a job? What if I'm financially privileged enough to not want to work? And three, what if there are no jobs in the market that I want to work, right? And so I'm no longer going to give the university funding, and the government's going to cut funding year after year because we're not meeting our performance metrics. On the flip side, we could be meeting our performance metrics really well and getting 100% of the funding all the time. So for example, work integrated learning, ensuring that every student has access to a job opportunity during their degree is something that's right now not our priority, but could be because of the performance metrics. And if we achieve those goals, we actually get rewarded for it. So these.
Thank you, President Kattengaard.
I hope that makes more sense.
Quick question from the live stream. This is from Council by Sunday to President Kattengaard. And I quote, cause was quoted in a CBC article as saying it was and he's quoting, cautiously optimistic about the about the move to performance-based funding. Does the students' union share the same opinion? End quote.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. So we do agree with the same vibe that we are cautiously optimistic. I'll again use the example of work integrated learning is something that's been so important for students, and this is a real way for us to hold our university accountable to those metrics, because if the university sets a metric, we can hold them accountable via funding. The reason that we're cautious is the exact same thing I was talking about earlier, where graduate employment rates or graduate income are things that are out of control oftentimes of the university. And in fact, metrics like this actually de-incentivize the concept of a university education, which one could argue is to create excellence, excellent research, excellent teaching, and excellent solutions to problems that we wouldn't be able to pursue if it wasn't for the funding that we receive through our previous agreements. So hopefully that answers your question, but if you have a clarification, I'm happy to answer more questions.
Perfect. Thank you. VP Agarwal, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Councillor Draper. I was just wondering if you could give us an update on the ORCA program that you've been working on and maybe an explanation of what it is for those of us who don't know it.
Great. Councillor Draper, you have 2 minutes.
Sure. So my position as Metro Academic of the Faculty of Arts Association, one of the projects which I tried to start off was called the ORCA, which is an acronym for the Open Resource Classroom Archive. It was a way in which I wanted to increase knowledge of what's inside the classroom when it comes to the enrollment of it, so you can actually go in and realize what the syllabus looks like, what the course description is, and what things are involved with the class itself, so you can know how you're going to be tested, what you're going to be learning before you even sign up for the class, looking at a variety of different other universities and non-university programs that do similar things, and how it is updated into the Faculty of Arts. I've been having monthly meetings with the Vice Dean of Teaching and Learning at the Faculty of Arts about this program. However, roughly 2 months ago, he said that due to the current financial landscape at the university, it's probably not feasible within the next long time. So we have to instead work more so as a as a full university level rather than just in the Faculty of Arts if something like that were to be created. And I hope it does, because it seems like it would be a great way to make sure students know what they're getting into when it comes to their classes and actually personalize their degree to make it as useful for them as possible.
All right, thank you. Councillor Dixon, 30 seconds.
Be cut for the following year at 15% first, and then over 3 years, it'll match up to 40% of the operating budget.
Great, thank you. We'll go to Councillor Marcus Alba for 30 seconds.
This is President Bhatnagar. So, I mean, I was pretty shocked from the proposal, from the announcement yesterday. The kind of one of the biggest things that's like ingrained in my brain is that there was a group of student representatives sitting or standing behind the minister during the announcement, most of whom are not from Edmonton. So they would have had to know about this announcement like before most people did, to drive out here on a Monday. But the biggest thing is that they all have these like giant smiles on their face. So my question is, what the hell is happening to the student movement in Alberta right now? Because that's unacceptable.
Thanks for the question. It's a great question, and I wish I had better answers for you, other than we're pretty disappointed with our student counterparts across the province who stood behind the minister and saying that these are positive and only positive things for students, because clearly they're not. Clearly there's a lot of confusion, and I think clearly students are being manipulated to be poised against each other because it's advantageous for a government to divide us when we should be in support of each other, if that makes sense. But let it be known that we are having very intensive conversations with our counterparts that were behind stage, and all of them were part of the Alberta Student Executive Council, separate from the Council of Alberta University Students. But this question has come up time and time again, like by everyone across this province who is very disappointed to see that students are being pitted against each other. And I truly can't blame the student leaders, because I blame the people that are giving mixed messaging to different bodies, assuming that we don't have these conversations behind closed doors. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of these conversations, and I'm hoping that students from across the province will join us when we make and demand changes from this government regarding this, or demand upgrades to what the government's looking for in terms of the release of budget 2020. So I wish I had a better answer for you, other than the fact that I'm disappointed is, I hope, think it's quite clear, but it is disappointing to see them trying to divide us when we should be united now more than ever.
Perfect. Thank you. So we have run out of time, but we can attend once for 15 minutes. I think five plaques in the air, 5 hands. Okay, that's five. Thank you. We're running out of 15 minutes. Timer is set. All right, next is from Councillor Dixon for 30 seconds.
Okay, so this is probably but so clearly this is like unacceptable and just like can't happen. So just like when the Alberta budget came out, there was a lot of questions about like what direct action is the student union going to take to kind of tell like the government that like, this can't happen, other than just having like a press release or something like that, because that's not enough for students. Clearly, like, this government doesn't care for us in a lot of different ways. So, like, what steps are we going to take to kind of, like, push back and show that this is, like, can't happen? Because, like, we're going to lose a ton of money for, like, metrics, like, how much money are kids making after they graduated 21 years old. So, yeah.
So, the manager?
I feel like that it's decided, if that makes sense, that the performance metrics are coming out whether we like it or not, and the only impact that we actually truly have is deciding the description of the metrics. So finding ways that we can actually make these metrics work for us rather than work against us is really the only medium we have. But I don't think any sort of action, any sort of public demonstration is going to change their minds. They've been extremely clear that it's happening. We literally have no choice to take the implementation, and the universities have already been given their mandate letters that explicitly state, please put these in your budgets going forward. So I think that there's room for us to do more direct action regarding the budget that's going to actually have direct impacts on the way these metrics are implemented. But regarding the metrics itself, we've done all that we literally can in terms of every advocacy strategy, trying to at least frame the metrics to work for us, and they took none of our feedback. And now, the day after they released the metrics, they're asking us for our feedback. So we're not really quiet and saying that we don't like them, but the reality is that we may as well find a way to make them work better for us than it works for them. Because they're holding us accountable, but right now there's not a lot of people holding them accountable. assessment just for that.
Thank you. This is Councilor Sunday. Last question. Could the Vice President, external or President, please go into detail about the new 3-year investment management agreements? President Batnagar, 2 minutes.
So the new investment management agreements are a shared agreement between the Ministry of Advanced Education and each individual 26 publicly funded post-secondary institutions. They agree on principles, elements, and performance metrics of the new post-secondary framework, and they are sort of outlined in 3 priority areas: skills and labor market outcomes, institutional performance, teaching and research. And there will also be metrics within that investment agreement that are not tied to funding, which will serve to enhance the transparency of the system. So the IMAs, or the investment management agreements, are going to overall provide 3-year funding projections, and the planned percentage of that funding will be subject to meeting the performance metrics. So basically, these letters are going to start rolling out pretty soon here, but the ministry will hopefully annually report on the following metrics for transparency. But again, it won't really be tied to funding, and the ones that have already been outlined are faculty to admin staff ratio, faculty workload, open educational resources, transfer credit awarded at an institutional level, institutional completion rates, and persistence rates. So basically these agreements are 3-year agreements starting right now until no renegotiations until 2023, which outlines the accountability from the ministry to the government, from the ministry to institution, from the institutions to the ministry.
Great, thank you. I'll go to Councillor Draper for 30 seconds.
This is to forward from the representative late. You mentioned in your report that there is the Quad Senate and GFC retreat on Friday to go over performance-based metrics, which I know was in there originally a preemptive meeting that I planned, but I guess with this is now a reaction to the announcement. For the members of council who are unable to attend this as they're not on GFC, would you be able to write a report and present it to council next meeting to kind of let them know what the university thinks from that retreat?
Until you have governor, you have 2 minutes.
I should be able to say some things. There may be some things that are said in confidence at this retreat, but I am happy to write a report and tell you anything that's public information.
They're going to write a report as well, the summit will, so then Governor Lee can just give you the report that they write.
Thank you. Councillor Bowles for 30 seconds.
Make something that could be seen as negative to really systemize it to make it seem positive for us. right? There's a lot of skills that UVA doesn't teach us, right? I learned a lot of my skills doing this job, doing other jobs on campus, so maybe there's a way for this to be a two-way street where, you know, the skills that our employers are surveying us on are not skills that we're great at, but our employers are willing to invest the time to professionally develop us, but the universities could also be doing more to help us become more professionally developed for the workforce, if that makes sense.
I just want to add on one extra thing that in faculty does have one English course which just focuses on how to write emails and how to write stuff.
Thank you, Councillor Bowles.
So
if someone wants to ask Councillor Bowles about this, they should ask him a question during our question period. Okay, thank you. Put you on the list. Councillor Vargas Alba.
Sorry, for an information, was the alarm the end of the time that we had allocated?
No, that was the end of President Battinger's time to speak. So I have two timers going at the same time. What's that? This is fully closing how much I have to do.
My blanket was to go extend, so I'm not the question.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So this is to President Battinger. So I know last week there was a report coming out of McKeown that they've already started laying off instructors, faculty, and earlier, I mean, I haven't really read it, so I'm not like super relying on like even that, like I haven't shared it to all of the council, I know that there was probably doing that in the past. But a report about updates on the budget from the president of the university, I was wondering if you knew of any numbers around any layoffs that might have already started with regards to faculty, to any like instructors or to anything that's started like being terminated.
So for the for budget 2019, which gave us operating cuts in our current budget, there's been no layoffs and no staff have been impacted because of the hiring freeze that we've implemented and cutting administrative spending. So printing has literally stopped, which is unfortunate. And I know that sounds wild, but it's actually been impacting a lot of faculty's ability to provide teaching because they cannot print exams because they don't have money sometimes. So that's been something interesting. The non-academic staff association also negotiated a voluntary winter leave where they 600 employees took up them on the fact that you can take unpaid leave around the holiday period if you wanted to do so. So because 600 employees did that, they saved some there, and their employee complement, which is essentially like attrition of positions, retirement forcing, employment hiring, hiring new sessional staff, has been again restrained. So there were no layoffs in this 2019 year. I can't speak for 2020-21 because we haven't seen those budget numbers yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the direction the university is going in, because they're having to make some really unfortunate changes to help ensure that students aren't at least suffering the most in this budget. So
thank you. So it's quite a nice question period, which is when counselors can ask questions, but you're always sitting next to a counselor who can't ask a question for you.
Can I yield?
No, but she can tell you what she wants you to say.
If she says it really loudly into my ears.
Okay, I will allow that, Councillor Syed. You have 30 seconds though, so go for it.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify. So is this budget measures affecting universities all around Canada? Or like, is it just for
okay, thank you, Councillor Syed. For who wants to take this fight? You can go. For the Battinger?
Ontario and Alberta are the only two provinces that have this funding model.
First. Thank you. But we have run, we're not out of time, but there's nobody on the speaking list right now. More questions? We have 3 minutes left. But if nobody else has any questions, then you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Vargas Alba, go for it.
Okay. So this question is for board members and representative lead. So with regards to the changes with the metrics, I'm just wondering if you could give any input from your specific position on how you think this will affect the student experience, especially when it comes to things like advising and specific student services.
Sure, Governor Lee, a few minutes.
Great. Thank you very much, Councillor, for that question that I did not know was wrong. But okay, so one thing that I think we should all remember about the metrics of the government. quotes is that they include a faculty to administrative spending ratio, and we know that the government accounts a lot of frontline services that support students as administration. So things like health services provided through the university central administration and advising, stuff like that. So I think one thing we need to keep in mind when talking about how we want to see these measures implemented is we need to try to find a way to protect critical services like mental health supports and advising, because the government presently categorizes those as administration, which if the model stayed the way it looks right now, would result in those being cut to increase the administration to faculty ratio. So that's something we should keep in mind as a goal, as well as perhaps some of what President Vandenberg said.
Perfect. Thank you. There's no one on the questions list right now. So with that, we're going to end question period and continue on. So move back to our agenda, sorry. So we're going to move into board and committee business. Councilor Grayford?
I would like to motion from the floor to vote to ratify second principle of Bill 9 as attached to the division passing.
That is in order. Is there a second there? I'm going to do the stat up first. Would you like a minute to introduce your motion?
These are the second principles that correspond to what was motion on the floor last year, in which to, I guess, simplify the ways in which EFUs go about getting their question on the ballot and removing a lot of logical inconsistencies within the bylaws that are quite important, especially going into this election.
Perfect. Thank you. So we'll begin the debate. If you want to be on the speaking list, please raise your placard. I will write down your name. I'll keep you on the list, and I'll nod you when you want to hear one of your calls. Nod you when you're down, and then I will call your name. So is there any debate on this motion? There is none. Then we will vote. This requires a simple majority. I assume you're all comfortable voting openly on this? Yes? Okay. So all in favor of the motion, please raise your placards. Slash. Vote. This might actually have to count on 3. Thank you. And I'll just give Councillor Sunday and Councillor Kadush perhaps a second. But regardless, that motion carries. Thank you. 19 in favor so far, 0 opposed, 0 abstentions. And now we'll move on to the rest of our board and committee business. Special order from the late edition, Dixon moves to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Sustainability Committee. Would you like a minute to introduce Councilor Dixon?
Sure.
Okay, you can have 1 minute.
Yeah. Okay, so I feel like you all heard about this committee. Quite a few times, but just unless you are, if you're unaware, basically the aim of this committee is to kind of evaluate different practices that the SU is doing and then create recommendations for positive change towards trying to improve sustainability at the university. We have a position open for a counselor. If you are interested in sustainability at all or would like to give your input, that would be really wonderful, and we would love to have you.
Perfect, thank you. So we're looking for one member. Do you have a nomination, Councilor Draper?
I would like to nominate Councilor Conrad.
Councilor Conrad, do you have it?
Good.
Councilor Dixon, maybe go over who's on the committee right now.
Yeah. Okay. It is the two of us, and then Luke is on it. No other counselors are on it, right?
I think Councillor Kidd might be.
Why is
not? No.
Okay, so is there a nomination?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Kidd.
Councillor Kidd?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other nominations for this committee, Councillor Conrad?
Yeah.
Yep.
Could I also nominate Councillor Bartzalba?
Councillor Bartzalba?
I respect the
sure. Let's keep it to a dull moment here, please.
Did I just get
what? Sorry. No. I'm trying to get your attention because there's a lot of side conversations going on. qualities.
I thought I got it.
Are there any other nominations for this position? Councillor Bartizawa.
Oh, I'd like to nominate Councillor Batiki.
Councillor Batiki?
I don't think.
Sure. Any other nominations? Vijay Agarwal?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Harris.
Councillor Harris?
Okay. Oh, okay, I respectfully decline my nomination. I don't want to deal with this.
Are there any other nominations? Councillor Dixon? Councillor Seed? For sure. Are there any other? Councillor Conrad?
I'd like to nominate Councilor Kidd again.
Well, I didn't want to be the one causing this.
Councilor Kidd? Well, all are making this very easy. Thank you. Okay, are there any other nominations? Councilor Vargasalo?
I'd like to nominate Councilor Draper.
Councilor Draper? Councilor Draper? Wow. Wait, did you say Councilor? Okay, thank you. Any other nominations? Hey, bring it in, please. Are there any other nominations? If not, we'll go into speeches. So you at least have a minute of the order that you're nominated in. So Councillor Kidd kind of finessed the system and is going third now. Interesting. Anyway, Councillor Harris, you have a minute to state why you want to be in the committee. Councillor C for 1 minute. Councillor Kidd for 1 minute.
Okay, so I've tried to get on this committee a few times, so if I don't get on, nobody be like, oh, poor Katie. Okay? That's the first thing. I feel like over this past year, I've become so passionate about sustainability. I started off kind of like Councillor Harris. I didn't really know a lot about it throughout the climate movement, throughout actually like my junior lifeguarding kids that I teach. They've taught me so much about sustainability. And I think it's really important that we as like youth leaders really do lead this movement. And I hope that I can take what I learned from this committee if I get appointed and use it to inspire not only my teaching, but also kind of everything else I might do in my life. I've said it like 4 times, but I ran a paperless classroom and it's really hard to do. Like, you have to have a lot of laptops and stuff. So I feel like I can do this. I feel like I'm committed to being sustainable. I've learned lots about it, and I would love to be on this committee. I do understand if you want to appoint a different counselor, because I am on a lot of
committees. Right. So thank you, Councillor Kidd. Councillor Draper for a minute.
So in my personal life, I am currently actually seeking the Sustainable Certificate offered here at the U of A, so I've been learning a lot through that about sustainability and how to kind of implement that in my own personal life, as well in a variety of different levels. One of my favorite classes I've taken has always been
environmental sociology class, which I think I feel would bring a lot of useful information from that class to this committee and take a sociological approach about a lot of things we're dealing with. I'd also like to bring up my current role on policy, which I think would work well with state laws, because then you could kind of bring a lot of information that's going on there to bylaws and to help have them work in tandem with each other to help have a two-pronged approach where we're working with the policies and working with the operations of the SU through the state laws committee, as well as we're making sure that the bylaws that govern the council and the bylaws that govern the SU are representative of the sustainability goals that are put forward by this committee.
Perfect, thank you. That ends our speeches. So what we're gonna do now is it is 8 o'clock. We've been here for an hour and a half. We're gonna have a break. When we come back, we will have our closed session, which is on the agenda. So we'll take 15 minutes during that time. Please find paper and write down your preferences in order of what you want them to be. So number one will be the first choice, two, so on and so forth, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you also have to vote for none of the above. Okay.
That's not true. Point of parliamentary actually.
Yeah.
If we were to like not go on the break and there's no items for close, so shouldn't we just adjourn early?
Yeah, that's fine. I was
then
informed.
You can stay late and count the nominations and then
Well, I was informed last meeting that the full session happens every time.
It happens every time, for
yeah.
sure, unless we decide not for it to happen.
Okay.
So,
you have a motion?
Close, if there's nothing to go into close for, I'm happy to just extend. Or we go into close to talk about things that we need to do. Okay, yeah, so let's.
Let's
ask him the question.
Hold on, bring it in. Sorry. So, what we're saying is that there could be. So, like, the close session happens every time. But President Badger is proposing that there is no closed session tonight. Go home a bit early, and then you can give your votes on the way out, and then you can leave, and I can go to the gym. So to do that, someone has to move to adjourn. So if President Badger wants to make that motion, we can certainly do that. Otherwise, we'll take a break.
Wait, can't we just suspend the standing order?
I mean, either way, it's the same thing. Standing order just takes more votes to pass.
Did
it go into
close last week?
Would you
like to make a motion?
That's because we ran out of time last time. Sorry, President Badger.
I'd like to make a motion to amend our break to only take 5 minutes so that we can cast our ballots, come back, go into close, and then leave. So the motion is just to amend our standing orders to allow for only a 5 minute break.
So that is an order. Is there a second for that? Councilor Draper, thank you. This requires 2/3, so can everyone in favor please raise their placards? Yeah, I'll do that once I get to go on the break. Okay, that motion carries, thank you. Before we go on the break, though, also I need to do attendance. So I'll bring it in for a second here.
Point of
order?
Yeah. I'm
receiving
my nomination.
Kate, you've heard. It's your first. Councilor Kidd is no longer.
Okay, my point of order.
Yeah.
So you just take
I'm gonna do that, yeah.
Whoa.
Okay, bring it in. Okay, President Badger. VP Agarwal.
Hello.
VP Brown, here. VP Stat.
Here.
VP Larson.
Here.
Governor Lee.
Here.
Proxy for Councilor McKenzie. Proxy.
Here.
You're here. Okay. Councilor Conrad.
Hello.
Councilor Bargazalva.
Yeah.
Councilor Beasley.
Here.
Councilor Chan. Councilor Dixon?
Yeah, too lazy to get.
Councilor Draper? Councilor Isaac?
Here.
Councilor Esmail? Councilor Marinakis? Councilor Kidd?
Yeah.
Councilor C?
Here.
Councilor Bose?
Here.
Councilor Batiki?
Here.
Councilor Harris?
Here.
Councilor Sunday? You're on the live stream. Councilor Nguyen? Councilor Blondin? Councilor Radouche? Councilor Dillon? Councilor Venetia? Councilor Katera? And Councilor Syed? Okay, you all have 5 minutes. I'll write the names down. Please vote.
Y'all, before you leave for your break for like bar stuff, because we're on a break, I can say whatever I want. But remember how like Adam and I were always like, swag, 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 all year last year? We finally got the swag!
later on the table. Everybody gets as many stickers as you want, so please only limit yourself to one to two of these patches. But they're really cool.
Praying that we have more, so
I will be back.
I assume.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So we are going into. Sorry, executives are very rowdy today. We're going into a closed session. Is there a motion to enter camera?
You don't need to do that. Mr. Shakir, it is now just like, okay, point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
I'm just trying to clarify the bylaw changes that we made. Just like we were automatically moving to general orders and automatically moving into board committee business, we automatically move into closed and de facto go into camera. It's an automatic thing, part of the agenda.
So unfortunately our guests, you'll have to leave for this part of the meeting, and likely this is the last thing. And for our proxy, we'll begin our closed session. I have no idea how this works. Does someone want to go on the speaking list? Okay. Okay. Let's make a new section. Councillor Vargas, I'll let you have.